This hour, we'll be hearing excerpts from the Intelligence Squared U.S. debate that took place at Asia Society in New York City on the evening of October 9, 2007. The series of debates is sponsored by the Rosenkranz Foundation, and the proposition this time is, let's stop welcoming undocumented immigrants. The audience was polled before and after the event. We'll have the final results later in the program, but the entry poll gauged the live audience as 42% in favor of the motion and only 34% against. 24% were undecided. The moderator for the night was veteran NBC and NPR news correspondent John Hockenberry. There are three panelists on each side, and each gives an opening statement. We'll sample some of these statements, starting with Heather McDonald, a fellow at the Manhattan Institute. She is speaking in favor of the motion, let's stop welcoming undocumented immigrants.
Two principles require that we stop welcoming undocumented immigrants, otherwise known as illegal aliens: respect for the rule of law and respect for facts on the ground. The ongoing violation of our immigration laws has reversed the traditional roles in a sovereign nation. It is now people living outside our border who determine our immigration policy, not Americans. A net 500,000 aliens enter the country illegally each year. Once inside, they have enjoyed virtual immunity from any risk of penalties, as well as receiving a host of taxpayer benefits. Such immunity is now considered an entitlement. Any hint of enforcement, no matter how limited, inevitably provokes a massive outcry from immigrant advocates and immigrants themselves that the government is behaving unfairly and indeed unlawfully. To be sure, the country has progressively put more agents on the border. But once an illegal alien got across the border, he entered a 3 million square mile sanctuary zone. This means that mass deportation is not required to revive the effectiveness of our immigration laws. The illegal population has burgeoned precisely because illegals assume they face absolutely no risk of enforcement. Increase that risk even slightly, and calculations change. After 9/11, the Department of Homeland Security deported 1,500 illegal Pakistanis living in New York, leading 15,000 more to leave on their own. A modest increase in enforcement would result in a similar reduction over time of the broader illegal alien population. The second principle supporting...
That was Heather McDonald. Next, we'll hear from Daniel Griswold, director of the Cato Institute Center for Trade Policy Studies. He is arguing against the motion.
Well, thank you, everybody, for coming out tonight. First, I want to lodge a protest at the proposition that we're debating. It's a little bit like, have you stopped beating your wife kind of question. I don't think anybody up here is thrilled about having illegal immigrants in the United States. Our side would like to see them able to come legally. And I'd like you to think of the motion as, let's stop welcoming more legal immigration, and I'd urge you to vote against it. Immigrants have made the United States a prosperous, dynamic, and free country. They have throughout our history. They continue to do so today, both on the higher end of the skill spectrum, but I will argue tonight that low-skilled immigrants are also benefiting the United States. There are two powerful economic and demographic trends, two very positive ones, that are driving low-skilled immigration to the United States. On the demand side, our economy continues to create hundreds of thousands of net new jobs every year for low-skilled workers in fields like retail, cleaning, landscaping, food preparation. And at the same time, the supply of Americans who traditionally filled these jobs, Americans without a high school diploma, has been dropping steadily. We're getting older. We're getting better educated. Less than 10% of Americans, adult Americans, do not have a high school diploma, compared to 50% in the early 1960s. 4.6 million fewer Americans are in the workforce without a high school diploma today than just a decade ago. So we have a structural mismatch between demand and supply in our economy. And yet, there's no legal channel for a peaceful, hardworking, 24-year-old Mexican or Central American to come into the United States legally and fill these jobs that there are simply not enough Americans there to fill. And yes, we have tried enforcement, and it's failed. We have ramped up real spending on enforcement sixfold in the last two decades. We built walls for miles into the desert. We have gone through periods of increased interior enforcement in the late 90s, and now again, it has made no dent. Enforcement without reform is doomed to fail. You know, we rounded up a few thousand workers at a chicken processing plant in Georgia a while back. You know, 2,000 down, 8 million to go. It's a futile exercise. There have been perverse consequences because of our enforcement. Those trying to get in are actually more successful because they're going through more remote regions of the desert. It's more dangerous. The death rate has tripled. 300 or 400 people are dying every year for the crime of wanting a better job, trying to cross the border. And here's the irony. Because of the expense and risk of crossing the border, once they're in, they tend to stay. Traditionally, we've had a strong circular component to Mexican migration. 80% of them who came here eventually went back home as temporary immigrants. And we've interrupted that now, and I think a legalization program would restore that circular flow. The only answer is immigration reform. We need to change the law. This is a broken, dysfunctional law. And I think we need to both create a temporary worker program and legalize those who are here. We're not talking amnesty. They would pay a fine. They would serve probation. That's the penalty for a misdemeanor. It's not a felony. It's not a crime to be here. It's a civil infraction. The punishment should fit the crime. Let me end by talking a little bit about national security. And I don't need to remind people in New York how important that is. None of us want to see a repeat of September 11th. I think a sensible immigration reform program would enhance our security and bring order to the border. This is a very important thing. We would begin to drain the swamp of smuggling and document fraud that can facilitate terrorism. We'd encourage people to come forward, to cooperate with the police rather than living in the shadows and being afraid. And also we would free up resources to go after the real criminals and terrorists. I think that's one reason why our Homeland Security boss, Michael Chertoff, has been such a strong supporter of immigration reform. It would make his job.
That was Daniel Griswold. And here's Vernon Briggs, professor of labor economics at Cornell University. He's arguing for the motion, let's stop welcoming undocumented immigrants.
Vernon Briggs.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Please don't let the other side confuse you. This is not about legal immigration. There's a difference between legal immigration and illegal immigration. The topic tonight, which the vote's supposed to be on, is illegal immigration, undocumented workers, if you want to call them that, but illegal immigration. That's the issue. And that's the principle that I'm in favor of stopping. Illegal immigration is not a victimless crime. There are people who lose and lose in big ways. And these are the most vulnerable people in our society. There are 90 million, it's a newspaper article just in last week's Ithaca Journal, 90 million people in our adults in a population of the United States who all have only a high school diploma or less. 90 million, that's half of the adult population of the entire country. Of that number, 50 million are in the civilian labor force. Almost one-third of the labor force has only a high school diploma or less. The problem this country faces is we have an oversupply of unqualified people in the country. And that oversupply are the group that are adversely affected by illegal immigration. This labor market is in surplus. And that's the problem. Why income levels at the bottom don't go up, why income distribution in this country is coming increasingly skewed toward greater inequality. And that's a very dangerous thing for a society to have happen to it. We all know that if undocumented workers were pouring into the professional elite ranks of this country, if they were coming into the professor ranks or the lawyer ranks or the business executive ranks, this issue would have been solved a long time ago. We wouldn't even be here tonight. We'd all understand very clearly that the undocumented workers coming into the legal profession or the doctor profession, 500,000 a year, was not good for the doctors in this country or the lawyers in this country who have to invest in their education and training and all the rest of it to get them those positions. But somehow when it comes to low-skilled workers, farm workers, maids, yardmen, and all the rest of these things, landscapers and hotel employees, people forget about the laws of economics. Illegal immigrants will always win in the competition for jobs. They become preferred workers. It's not that U.S. citizens will not do these jobs. Employers don't want them. Illegal immigrants will always work for the longest hours, the lowest paid, and the worst working conditions because no matter how bad conditions are in this country, they're infinitely better than they are in the country that they came from. Remember, 2 billion people on this planet today earn less than $2 a day. Half of all the workers in the world today, that's what they make. So in the competition for jobs, they will always be a preferred worker if employers can have them. My view is they should not be allowed to have access to that supply of labor.
That was Vernon Briggs. Now, arguing against the motion is Enrique Morones. He's talking about Border Angels, a group that he founded in 1986.
What we're best known for is putting water in the desert, putting water in the desert to save people's lives. Border Angels is a nonpartisan, faith-based organization, and our mission statement says, if I was hungry, did you give me to eat? If I was thirsty, did you give me to drink? Period. In October of 1994, the United States government decided to build a wall between the United States and Mexico. We protested against this wall. What the government said is going to stop the flow of migrants. And I said, why would it stop the flow of migrants? The United States invaded Mexico in 1846, took half its territory, and there was a treaty that was signed, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, where people were supposed to be able to go back and forth freely. That was never honored. And it's been estimated by the flyer that I have in the back that 4,500 people have died in the last 13 years. And that's an estimate, according to the Border Patrol. But I think the number is closer to 10,000 people. Whether it's 4,500 or 10,000, people should not be dying because they're coming here for a better opportunity. Lucrecia Dominguez was one of those people. She crossed with two of her children, Jesus and Nora. Jesus, a 15-year-old little boy, and Nora, a 7-year-old little girl. And she crossed the only way she could because poor people cannot get visas. So when people tell you, why don't they just get in line? What line? There is no line. So she crossed. She crossed with an unethical smuggler, like many of them are, and we're opposed to that, of course, and a group of migrants. And what happened was they ran out of water. The smuggler said, you're slowing us down. You got to cross on your own. She left her behind with two of her children. She literally died in the arms of Jesus, her 15-year-old son. This is the real story of what's happening right now. It's inhumane, and we can do better than that as a people. We are a great people. There's 3.5 million people that have marched for immigration reform. Your grandchildren are going to ask you one day, what did you do when they were raiding families at 3 a.m, when two people were dying every day crossing the border? The whole world is watching. Do the right thing. We need humanity.
That was Enrique Morones, and these are excerpts from a live Intelligence Squared debate. Here's Mark Krikorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, arguing for the proposition, let's stop welcoming undocumented immigrants.
We want. Through our elected representatives, we've made a decision, incoherent sometimes as it is, about what our legal immigration policy should be. Given what our legal immigration policy is, the law needs to be enforced if it's to mean anything. And there's two ways you enforce immigration law. One is the conventional method of arresting and detaining and deporting people. But at least as important, if not more important, is to deter lawbreaking, to dissuade those abroad from sneaking in or overstaying their visas, and to encourage, especially the more recent illegal immigrants, to leave and go home. And the welcome that we have, in fact, extended and been extending to illegal immigrants for many years now subverts that second element of law enforcement. So what that means is we have two choices. Either focus even more on rounding up, arresting, detaining, and deporting people, leaving that as our sole approach to enforce immigration law, or just give up enforcing immigration law and have de facto open borders, which, despite all the disclaimers, is what the other side wants. What is this welcome that we're talking about? What does it consist of? What are we doing to essentially subvert enforcement of our own immigration laws? Some of these things you're familiar with, of course. Governor Spitzer's rule on driver's licenses. The driver's license is, in fact, our national ID system. And anything that makes it easy for illegal immigrants to get licenses means it makes it easy for them to live here and to embed themselves in our society. We don't even do basic things like tell employers that they have submitted a fake or stolen Social Security number from an illegal immigrant employee. And that matters because the majority of illegal immigrants work on the books. They actually gave their employers a fake or stolen Social Security number. We don't even tell employers and hold them accountable for making sure that that information is correct. What we really need in ending this welcome is to pursue what I like to call a firewall strategy. Make it not just difficult to get in the country, which is something we need to do, but also make it hard to gain access to the important institutions of our society so that it becomes as difficult as possible to be an illegal immigrant. So you can't get a driver's license, you can't get a job, etc. I describe that as an attrition policy. In other words, not magically eliminating the illegal immigration problem, but causing the illegal immigrant population, instead of growing every year, to start declining every year. Our research shows we could reduce the illegal population by half in 5 years through normal law enforcement methods, not tattoos, not machine guns, not landmines. Normal law enforcement consistently applied, and that's the key. Normal law enforcement.
That was Mark Krikorian. The last opening statement comes from Karen Narasaki, president of the Asian American Justice Center, and she is arguing against the motion.
Of our culture. Now, everybody here actually on stage agrees on one thing, and that is our current immigration system is broken. What we disagree about is what is broken about it and how best to fix it. If you vote for us, it's because you share our belief that immigrants are, in fact, integral to who we are as America, and that they and their children are integral to the benefit and future of our country. Now, restrictionists have consistently been on the wrong side of history. And if you vote with them, it's because, despite our long experience as a nation, you share their doubt about the power of American culture and American values. Rather than dealing with the very discomforting dislocations, and they are scary, brought about by globalization and the new internet-driven economy, it's easier to blame immigrants and target them for their fears, as if they all went away magically, we wouldn't have these new challenges. They hope to keep jobs in America by building high walls. And if we follow their old school isolationist prescription, America's ability to generate jobs and compete in the global economy will fail. Before computers and the internet and the globalization of corporations, it might have been possible to lock those jobs in. That's no longer the case. Even agribusiness is moving across borders, with American companies buying farmland in Mexico because they can't get the workers they need here in the U.S. The American Bar Association magazine this month featured a story on the outsourcing of legal work to India. Because the reality is today with the internet, even if you keep immigrants out, it doesn't mean that the jobs are staying here. All of us agree that a system which results in a huge number of undocumented immigrants who are extremely vulnerable to the exploitation that the professor talked about is not good. I want to be clear. Despite the back and forth, we are not arguing for open borders, and we're not arguing that our laws should not be enforced. What we are saying is, let's be smart. Let's talk about what laws need to change so, in fact, they are enforceable and they make sense. Laws only function when they're humane. And right now, our immigration laws are not humane, and they do not make sense. As Dan said, we don't provide...
You're listening to an IQ Squared U.S. debate on the proposition, let's stop welcoming undocumented immigrants. And we'll now begin the question and answer period with the event's moderator, John Hockenberry.
I'm going to begin, though, by offering a question to each side of the audience here. For those of you supporting the resolution, and I'll address this to you, Heather. Under any regime that you've discussed tonight of law enforcement or changes in laws, how would you define success? And in the case that you would achieve that success, how many fewer of that 12 million undocumented immigrants would be in the country after your regime is adopted?
Well, I sort of reject the question, John, because I don't think it's necessary to put an absolute number on it. I would think success would be seeing the change decision-making, that once you start enforcing the law, you're going to see much fewer people come across the border.
What, much fewer? How many fewer?
In one stretch of Texas that started not just putting people on the border, but detaining them after they were apprehended rather than the current catch-and-release policy, there's been a 50% drop in illegal crossings in a few months. The Washington Post itself declared that this shows that the way to get control of the border is simply to enforce the laws on the books. But the fact is that right now we are sending a message to the billions of people in this world that once they get across the border, nothing happens to them. If we have an amnesty I can predict what will happen. More will be coming in illegally. That is what the consequences have been of every amnesty in this country and in Europe. That record is quite clear.
All right. Thank you, Heather. Enrique, let me ask the question to you. How many would you offer the chance to stay of that 12 million?
I think that the people that have that are the real criminals, those are the people that should be in prison, and that which is a very, very small percentage. So the overwhelming majority of these people would be allowed to stay and become documented. They're not looking for citizenship. They're looking for a document like the driver's license, some sort of document. A driver's license doesn't give them the right to be here, by the way. But they're looking for a document that allows them to stay. It's an economic plus to have the undocumented people here. There's people from the Wall Street Journal here, Business Week. They've all said that it's an economic plus. $7 billion a year goes to Social Security just from the undocumented community. The median age of the U.S. population is 40 years old. The undocumented community is 25 years old. We need to replenish our workforce, what's happening in this country today. It's very, very important. These people are here to work. When was the last time you saw a Latino on a corner with a sign that says, "We'll work for food"? You don't see it. You'll see 10 of them at the Home Depot ready to jump in your car. We need the workers. Unemployment is at 4.5% in this country. So they're an economic plus. They're a plus to the values of this country. So I say the 12 million people that are here, with the exception of the criminals, which is a very, very small percentage, they should be allowed to stay and have a pathway to legalization.
So very close to 12 million undocumented immigrants would be allowed a chance to become citizens under your...
Become documented.
Right, documented citizens. All right. Jerry Orstrom has a question. He's on the left-hand side in row H. Could you stand?
Heather, I think I'll address this to you, my good friend. Given my utterly blind luck in being born American, by what moral authority can I deny that same opportunity and privilege to any of the world's other 6 billion inhabitants? And any of your colleagues are welcome to respond to that as well.
I think it is what nations do. They have borders. If you're suggesting that there should be no more nations in this world, that is a very radical change. And I don't think that our neighbors to our south would agree with that either. You know, Enrique talks about our inhumane laws. Well, Mexico has about the fiercest border patrol that you can imagine that rounds up Central Americans that are coming in transit to get through the United States. This has been a prerogative of nations throughout history to decide who comes in. It's not a moral question. It's simply the right of nations to decide who is within their borders and who is outside of them. Mexico, you know, several years ago, a governor of Baja suggested that perhaps Mexico has some responsibility for preventing these deaths in the desert because they have a law that requires people leaving the country to exit through lawful ports of exit and entry. And he suggested that maybe if Mexico started enforcing that law, it would decrease the deaths. And of course, this created a massive outcry among the Mexican elites who believe that it is the right of Mexicans to immigrate into the country illegally. I disagree with that, and I think Mexico itself would say the same about people from Nicaragua and El Salvador.
John, could I take a
look at
that? I'd have to disagree just a tiny bit and say that it is a moral question, that the nation is a moral good. Often doesn't behave morally, but that's a different question. It is peoplehood is part of what we as human beings have programmed in us, belonging to a people. And that means that we have a greater moral responsibility to those who are us, who are fellow members of our people, than we do to foreigners. It doesn't mean we have no responsibility to those who live outside our national community, but our priority has to be those who are our countrymen, just as you feed your children first before you give money to charity. And so I would submit that that arguing that everyone in the world has a right to come to the United States is itself immoral. The argument itself is morally wrong.
John, if I could...
Mark Krikorian, thank you very much. Enrique.
I want to address a couple
of quick
comments. One about the Mexico part. That was a senator, former mayor of Tijuana, that made that statement, Hector Osuna. And the and he's right. We cannot ask of the North what we don't do in the South in Mexico. And I was just down in Mexico just 2 weeks ago. And this is a worldwide phenomenon. And Mexico definitely needs to do more, as do the other countries around the world. So that with that being said, but the impact of U.S. policies affects the entire world. When you talk about the United States doing something and it has a cold, it sneezes, the entire world, especially the Americas, get a cold. When Mexico does something and has problems, that stays within Mexico. Mexico doesn't want the people to leave. They know that the future of Mexico is within Mexico, but the people are starving. We need to help Mexico more develop and help other countries as well. We have that moral responsibility. The Constitution of Mexico says that we have the freedom of movement. We're not denied the opportunity to go to other countries, but it doesn't encourage, contrary to what you've seen in these myths, people crossing to other countries without papers. My organization does not encourage that. People should cross in a humane manner, and that's why we're asking for humane and comprehensive immigration reform. Comprehensive, the 12 million people get a pathway to the legal the document, and humane, having a humane manner in which people can enter, which doesn't exist right now.
Enrique, do you believe that anyone who wants to come to America should be allowed to come here?
I think there should be a process that they would go to. That right now, if you're poor, you don't get that opportunity. And there should be that opportunity. We should have humane laws to address that.
Karen Narasaki.
Well, I think this is where we get into these false choices. And one of the false choices here is we either enforce and become a police state or we let everybody in the world in. That's not really the choice. I mean, if we want to deal with Mexico, as Enrique says, a lot of the policies, the trade policies, other things that America has done is what drives a lot of immigrants here. That's why we have a huge refugee population here. So what we need to do is, in addition to looking at what we're doing with the system here, we need to look at what are our policies around the world? How much help are we giving to Mexico and other countries who are sending countries? How are we helping them to stabilize their democracies? How are we helping them to grow their economies? I mean, the Philippines is one of the largest sending countries in the world. They get more money from remittances from Filipinos who are around the world than they get in foreign aid. We have to change that. We have to really think outside the box. It's not just about punishing people who are here who are looking for a better life, but it's what can we do as a nation to change how we approach the problem? Because it isn't a choice of we beat up people or we let everybody in. That is not the choice.
But it does sound like that's the choice. I've yet to hear anybody on the opposing team say whether they think there should ever be any immigration enforcement. Do you think a penalty should ever be levied against somebody who comes into the country?
Heather said we believe in enforcement. We're not talking about we're talking about smart enforcement.
But tell me what you would do if somebody comes into the country.
I talked about wage and hour, health and safety. I talked about
that's not immigration laws.
If we're going to deportation, I don't think it should be by raiding people, pre-dawn raids with people wearing cowboy hats carrying machine guns aimed at children.
So should the raids be at noon? Should people wear different kinds of hats? I mean, I think it's a legitimate question. I mean, I'm not trying to make a joke here, but
that's Mark Krikorian.
I have to say, and I've been doing this now for more than 12 years, specifically in this job, and I've got to say, I have never heard someone on that side of the debate say, yes, this specific enforcement action, and I'm not talking about, you know, criminals, you know, drug dealers or something, regular immigration violation, that this specific enforcement action is okay. This I approve of. I've never found
a single action ever. That is not true. We supported comprehensive reform,
let Karen finish and then Daniel.
Yeah, which had tough employer sanctions,
I'm talking about
but they were done reasonably.
Not promises of future enforcement. Is there anything that's ever happened, any enforcement action in the past, say, 20 years, that anyone on your side would be able to say, yeah, okay, that's good enforcement. That I'm all for. I would favor
enforcement if we had a law that was enforceable and we weren't throwing money down a rat hole, which is what we're doing now.
And isn't
it interesting?
Let's focus on the specific question. Is there any, and go down the three on the side, Karen, Enrique, and Daniel. Is there any enforcement that you would consider to be good enforcement in terms of immigration, not so much the wage and hour issues that you were talking about, and I take your point. Any enforcement of immigration laws that you would consider to be rational and not money down a rat hole? Daniel Griswold.
Well, one, the law has to be rational, and our law is irrational. You have two very different
visions. Give me a rational law.
A rational law recognizes the reality of the U.S. economy. We need these workers. We're better off with these workers. The reason 500,000 come a year, and not 2.5 million, but just 500,000, is that's about the demand of our economy. If we had a law that reflected our needs as an economy, our values as a nation, you would not have people coming across the border just to work.
So in that case, the regulation would be if, you know, Burger King here in Austin, Texas, can guarantee you a job, you get a visa.
Yes.
And if there is no job for you, you can't just show up on a street corner.
Right.
And that would be a law that
whatever happened to the market.
And they don't come if there's not a job. It's very expensive to come here and not have a job and hang around. In the 1950s, we dramatically increased the number of visas. Illegal immigration dropped by 95%. That's our vision. It's a system that's worked in the past. It'll work in the future. They're asking you to buy a pig and a poke. This time, if we just spend enough money, if we just station enough agents on the border, if we just raid enough chicken
that's
processing plants.
So you can't use false data. You can't figure it live.
And discount stores. It'll work this time.
You're listening to a debate on the proposition, let's stop welcoming undocumented immigrants. We'll now rejoin the question and answer period of the debate right where we left off. Vernon Briggs, speaking in favor of the motion, counters Daniel Griswold and gives his view of immigration history.
You can't. The reason that illegal immigration fell during the 1950s is because we had this awful program called Operation Wetback in the early 50s, which was a massive roundup in which nobody was defend on this side of the borders, and we had a large number of illegal immigrants. When that program ended, because of the massive violation of civil rights, illegal immigration went down. It wasn't because we introduced more visas.
Illegal immigration began going up when the Bracero program ended. It was the extending of more visas.
Massive roundups. And I'd actually like to know from Enrique and Karen, do they support another Bracero program? Because that's what he's talking about.
Massive roundups.
Guest workers.
Using that terminology, like Operation Wetback, actually deported a lot of U.S. citizens as well.
That's
if
right.
You were Mexican, whether you were born in the United States or not, you were deported. We have somebody here who's mom was in a detention facility during the Second World War. So we cannot accept this type of a situation at all. And the guest worker program,
that's what Dan's calling for.
When was
the
last
time?
When was the last time you had a guest in your house and you said, now I want you to clean the bathroom and mow my lawn? Either you're a guest or you're a worker. So we need to have some sort of a humane program. We need to have some sort of a humane program which addresses this issue. Another thing that was mentioned about Mexico, it is true. We don't have a border patrol, but the military is down on the southern border, partially funded by the United States because they're trying to stop the flow right down there before they get into Mexico. And it's very important to note that if the wall had been built from the Pacific Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico on September 10th, September 11th would have happened exactly the same way. One of the solutions that we should be doing is working with Mexico, creating bridges of communication and not triple fences of separation. We know people have come from the north, from Canada, yet the National Guard, the wall, the Minutemen, they're on the southern border. So we need to be working with our neighbors and treating them as neighbors, not as enemies. And that's one of the things that we're looking for. Look at the European Common Union, how they've gotten together and improved the economy of all of the countries. A rising tide raises all ships.
By enforcing the immigration laws at the border.
In helping Latin America. We send billions to the Middle East and only millions to Latin America. Help Mexico and the other countries in Latin America develop, and the people will stay. We're still going to need immigrants here, though. We're still going to need it. But let's think about it intelligently, not with all this rhetoric, not with laughing about people dying at the border. I'm the only one that's here, that's at the border every day, has seen dead bodies out there, has picked them up. This is no laughing matter. Our people are dying. It's inhumane. If the world is watching us, and they're saying, how could this country allow them to build this wall and attack a community like
Enrique
that?
Enrique Morones, thank you very much. I want to take another question from the audience. Judith Zucker, I believe, on the right side, row H. Could you stand, please?
Well, I believe I asked the question to please speak to the issue of, in this era of homeland security, when we are supposed to be keeping our borders so safe, why is it that we have this immigration issue at such an extreme level at this point? The irony is very strange to me.
Could I take a whack at that?
Please, go ahead. Yeah, Mark Krikorian.
The reason immigration policy is relevant to security now is not just some opportunistic thing. Well, 9/11 was a big deal, so let's concoct some rationale based on security to reduce immigration. We looked, actually, after 9/11, we looked at the 48 al-Qaeda-related terrorists who had either committed criminal acts or had been arrested before they were able to commit their crimes. starting with the first World Trade Center attack, finishing with 9/11. And there were a lot in between, either smaller attacks or conspiracies that were interrupted. And the majority of those people committed immigration violations. The fact is that a more vigorous, consistent, comprehensive enforcement of the immigration laws would have exposed, probably, as far as we can tell, every single major terrorist conspiracy against the United States. Even when you look at 9/11, the fact is that four of the hijackers were in some form or another illegal aliens. A couple had overstayed. One had overstayed earlier and shouldn't have been allowed back in, but was. One of them was an illegal alien and was stopped by the police for driving whatever it was, 95 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour zone, and nobody checked whether he was legal or illegal. So that the fact is that every effort at attacking the United States has involved, must necessarily involve immigration law, and has almost inevitably and almost always will involve violations of immigration law, John, that if we detect, can unravel.
It's a bunch of nonsense.
Thank you, Mark.
Timothy McVeigh. Timothy McVeigh.
Dan, let's get a response from Dan Griswold, then you, Enrique.
Last time I checked, not one of those 48 terrorists was a Mexican. They weren't from Central America. They were from a particular part of the world.
Oh, so we just go after the Arabs first. Okay.
For historical reasons. They were not from Central America. None of them snuck across the Mexican border to get into the United States, and yet that was where we were obsessed with our resources. So we were basically guarding our back door while the terrorists waltz in through JFK through the front door. It's not an immigration problem. You know, every day, if today was a typical day, 1 million people entered the United States. It's about 1 million foreigners a day enter the United States legally. The vast majority of them turn around and go home within 30 days or 60 days. That's our vulnerability. And yet we're sending these resources down there to catch dishwashers and roofers and people who have no criminal intentions, no criminal records. They just want to come here and work. You talk about interior enforcement. Again, what in the world are we spending all these resources going after businesses and peaceful, normal workers when the real vulnerability are bridges and nuclear power plants and other infrastructure? That's why the raids tailed off so much in 2003. It was because we were trying to guard our critical infrastructure. Well, I like McDonald's, but it's not critical infrastructure. If they want to hire a worker, I think they should be able to, and we should create that legal channel. If we had a sensible legalization program, all these problems would be more manageable. We'd be more secure if our Homeland Security Department was going after the real criminals and terrorists.
So you want
and
to
not
abolish
going
all
after
employer
peaceful
sanctions.
Workers.
That's all you want to do.
Vernon
that's what you're saying. I mean, the reason we have these job sites, these roundups and what have you, is because we've got a law that says they're not supposed to be there. And there are people that are hurt. They're the low-wage workers of all races and ethnic groups. I'm not just concerned about Mexicans. I'm concerned about people of all races who are both illegal immigrants and those who are hurt in this country.
It was Martin Luther King that said you cannot legislate morality. And once again, they're using fear tactics of fear. As was mentioned by Daniel, none of those people were from Latin America. Timothy McVeigh was born.
The question and answer period ended with these comments from Karen Narasaki. She's arguing against the motion, let's stop welcoming undocumented immigrants.
Question on your earlier question, that is, in fact, there are some enforcement that we support. We just want it to work. And so, you know, if we're going to have an employer system of checking, that's great. But we need to have the database then be accurate, because it's a big thing not to be able to get a job because somebody has fingered you. And if anybody's tried to go straighten out something with the government, you know it's not an easy task. So we just want to have a system that's going to work where people have the right to challenge, where the government has obligation to fix its database, where the sanctions are not so high that employers are just going to randomly start to racial profile as a way to avoid the problem. And let me say, I mean, one of the things about driver's licenses, California passed a law a while ago saying we're not going to give driver's licenses to undocumented. Well, they started denying licenses to Puerto Ricans because the people working at the DMV didn't understand who the Puerto Ricans were. They thought since they couldn't produce a green card that they were legally here. We cannot put those kinds of decisions at that level. Border enforcement is great. Let's have a citizens commission to make sure it's done humanely and to make sure that people are being held accountable for how they act.
But bottom
that's
line, illegal immigrants don't work.
Vernon Briggs.
That should be the principle. If you would say that, I would go along with everything you said. What the bottom line of employer sanctions must be, what we're saying is that illegal immigrants do not work in the United States. That's the law of the United States since 1986.
Can I tell you, you were right that employer sanctions did not work in the 90s because there was a wink and a nod about really employers wanting them and issues. Well, you know, the immigrant community has come to grips with that, and there was very hard negotiations with labor and Chamber of Commerce and businesses that was brokered by Senator Obama to come up with a system that works. That's all people are asking for.
All right,
we're
and
not
we are
saying
reaching
no
a,
enforcement.
We're reaching a passionate
That concludes the question and answer period. In our remaining time, we'll listen to excerpts of the closing statements, beginning with Dan Griswold. He is arguing against the motion, "Let's stop welcoming undocumented immigrants."
Those workers who come here illegally are not bad people. They're not criminals in the usual sense of the word. They're good, decent, hardworking family people who've run afoul of a very bad law that needs to be changed. You know, the proposition here about welcoming illegal immigrants, some welcome. If you want to come here, you have to pay a smuggler, a coyote, $2,000, risk your life in the desert and sometimes not make it and die a terrible death. Live a shadow existence here, not having full employment opportunities, not being able to go home and visit your family on holiday because you may not get back into the country. That isn't welcoming them. And these people may be low-skilled, but they're not dumb. They'll respond to incentives. If we give them an alternative, a legal alternative to the current dysfunctional system, I think they'll obey the law and enter the country legally, as they did in the 1950s when we offered sufficient number of the Bracero visas. Allow them to come in a safe, orderly, legal way through our normal ports of entry to assume all the responsibilities and privileges of working in our above-ground economy. They love their country. Believe it or not, not everybody in the world wants to live in America. In fact, most people don't. They love their country. They love their culture and their family. They want to stay home. And traditionally, back when we had a kind of don't ask, don't tell policy of immigration from Mexico, most of them went back home because that's where their family is and that's where they want to go. Right now we have a broken law that needs to be changed. I think we should welcome more legal immigrants, and that's why I urge you to vote against this resolution.
Daniel Griswold, thank you very much. Speaking against the resolution, now to speak for the resolution in final rebuttal, Heather McDonald.
Well, we've heard, I think, a lot of sleight of hand by the opposing team, which is to conflate illegal immigration and legal immigration. They basically have been debating a proposition that is not before us tonight, which is we should continue welcoming legal immigration. All of our team member is for that. We agree that legal immigration is part of this country's history. It is appropriate. It is brings values, but one of the values that this country stands for is the rule of law. If we continue to wink at illegal immigration, I think that we are cutting away at the fabric of what makes this country great. There is nothing inhumane about enforcing laws in a colorblind, fair manner. We have yet to do that. But it is not inherently inhumane to have an immigration law. We haven't tried it. When we start, we will be sending a message to people that it is not right to come here. We are working with Mexico. We are giving them aid. We're working on the border. They have a responsibility. Other countries have a responsibility, it seems to me, to do something about their own economies. Which we are trying to help them with, and to prevent their citizens from trying to come into this country illegally. Again, we are a great country, and part of that is the rule of law, and currently the system is broken. The thing to do is to start fixing it by enforcing it. Thank you.
Speaking for the resolution, Heather McDonald. Now to speak against the resolution in final rebuttal, Karen Narasaki.
All we are trying to debate tonight is what kind of country do we want to be? How do we want to enforce these laws? Restrictionists, for example, object to allowing undocumented immigrants to have bank accounts and pay taxes. They say that's welcoming. Yet without bank accounts, these immigrants are vulnerable to criminals who know to rob their businesses or invade their homes because they know they will find a lot of cash. And how does it help America to stop immigrants from being able to pay taxes to help cover their share of the cost of building roads or running schools? Isn't that one of the reasons restrictionists give for what they feel is unfair about undocumented immigrants in the first place, which, by the way, do pay taxes? And in fact, in a recent study that was done on Long Island, for example, immigrants were paying much more of their share of taxes than they were actually using in benefits. So let's jettison the old way of thinking, because it really hasn't served our country well. Let's ask ourselves, do we want to be a country where we turn teachers and coworkers, ministers and nurses and neighbors into immigration police, or one where we have sensible, realistic immigration flows with a well-trained border enforcement agency who are held accountable for following their own laws, one that continues to hold agencies accountable for following the rules when they make decisions about people's lives, or one that eliminates the systems of checks and balances and sacrifices due process along the way? If you vote for our side, it's because you believe that it's time for us to stop scapegoating immigrants and instead focus on how do we fix the real problems? How do we fix the push that pushes immigrants here? And what do we do with immigrants once they're here to make sure that our communities are healthy and thriving and that we continue to be able to compete well in the global marketplace? Thank you.
Thank you. Karen Arasaki speaking against the resolution. Now to speak for the resolution in final rebuttal, Vernon Briggs.
The current situation we have of massive abuse of our immigration system breeds widespread cynicism throughout the country by illegals and by citizens about what are American values. Illegal immigrants know they're exploited, but they have no choice but to take the jobs that are offered to them. They're still better than what they had where they came from. Citizens are appalled by the lack of concern by their own country about the unfairness of the competition that low-wage workers are confronting with the presence of illegal immigrants. Perversely, we have set up a system where those employers who try to follow the immigration laws of the United States are put at a competitive disadvantage by firms that are allowed that violate the laws and can underbid them and undersell them in the labor market. Currently, the way that because we don't enforce our immigration laws, we are basically rewarding law-breaking, and those who follow the laws are actually punished. Many years ago, the famous CBS correspondent Edward R. Murrow said the duty of journalists is to separate slogans from policies. I think that's the duty of scholars also. Tonight, we've heard a lot of slogans from the other side, but no policies. Our position is one of clear policy, not slogans about scapegoating and nation of immigrants and who we are as Americans and all that. If we could actually begin to enforce our immigration policies, we could turn to the real issues of what's pushing people out of these countries that I'd love to discuss. Those are the big issues, but we can't get to those issues. Human rights violations, population pressures, unfair trade policies, and all the rest of it, because the system is so out of kilter because we don't enforce our immigration laws. We desperately need to do so. The Jordan Commission said the credibility of the immigration policy can be measured by a simple yardstick. The people who get in, who should get in, do get in. The people who should not get in are kept out, and the people who are deportable are required to leave. That's Barbara Jordan. No racist, and it can't be said any clearer.
Thank you, Vernon Briggs.
And that concludes our debate. The audience was polled a second time at the end of the evening, and the proponents of the resolution, that is, those who want to stop welcoming undocumented immigrants, won by an even greater margin than at the beginning. It was now 60% for and 37% against. 3% were still undecided. So this 23 percentage point spread is up from the 8 percentage point spread at the beginning. To hear the full unedited version of this or other debates in the IQ Squared series, or to subscribe to our podcast, visit npr.org/intelligencesquared. The Intelligence Squared U.S. debate series is an initiative of the Rosencrantz Foundation, Chairman Robert Rosencrantz, Executive Producer Dana Wolf. For more information about this series, or to find out how you can get tickets to attend future live events, visit www.iq2us.org. That's www.iq2us.org. The goal of Intelligence Squared U.S. is to raise the level of public discourse in American life and to recognize that on most contentious issues, both sides have intellectually respectable views. The series is produced for radio by WNYC in New York, producer Rob Christensen, senior producer Ellen Horn. The recording was engineered by Edward Haber with production assistance from Priya George. Intelligence Squared US is distributed by NPR, National Public Radio.